God should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, and wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, or meeting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none through hunger or ill will wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is what to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to pursues, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
One of the things about meditation practice, which I have always found very interesting and very kind of puzzling in a sense, and that is the basic idea of what meditation is all about is so simple. Yeah, the general idea of the general type of meditation that we do a lot in Buddhism is what we call mindfulness of breathing. And watching the breath is a very common thing. It was used by the Buddha himself, and it was recommended by the Buddha in place after place. It talked about mindfulness of breathing here. And because of that, it is probably one of the most important of all the meditation practices, as far as Buddhism is concerned. A very natural meditation, yeah, very kind of focusing on an aspect of the physical body, nothing kind of fancy or far-fetched or very weird, anything like that about it. So it's very simple. It's just about the breath. And then on top of the breath, it is attention. You have to be aware of the breath. And it's basically those two things coming together. That is what meditation practice is all about. Attention and the breath. And keeping the attention on the breath is what it is about. So very simple on the one hand. But if you ask people whether they can do mindfulness of breathing, there's a very small, tiny minority who will raise their hand. Yeah, and they'll say, oh, it's so hard, it's so difficult. Really, it's hard. You have to watch your breath, for goodness sake. It can't be all that hard. Oh, I can't do it. I don't know why. It doesn't work out. Yeah, so it's kind of strange. On the one hand, it's so simple. So basic, couldn't be more natural than watching your breath. At the same time, most people find it actually quite hard and quite difficult to sustain the attention on the breath. And this is one of those weird conundrums about meditation practice. The idea, the theory is so simple, but in practice it actually turns out to be quite hard to actually do this. So one of the tricks then, of course, is to try to find out what is the cause, what is the reason why it is hard, although it is simple. It is simple and hard at the same time. What is actually going on here? And what is one of the reasons why this is happening, why such a simple thing is so difficult to do? It has to do with our priorities. What are the things that we prioritize in life? What actually is really meaningful to us? What are the things that we tend to think about, have an interest in? Where does our mind tend to go? And that is really, in many ways, the critical issue which either enables us to meditate or makes it very difficult for us. So if we have the right kind of values, if we have the right kind of outlook in life, if we prioritize the right things, yeah, that's really about prioritizing things. If we prioritize things in the right area, then our mind will tend to go into the meditation. If we don't, that is when it's difficult. So what is it that you prioritize? How do you know that? How do you know what you prioritize in your life? And the way to know that, and this is one of the things you actually find out during your meditation, yeah, what you prioritize, how do you know that? What you do is you just watch your mind. What happens with your mind during the meditation practice? And wherever your mind tends to hang out, yeah, whatever your mind tends to do, that is what you prioritize. And very often you find one of the kind of very common problems in meditation practice is the thinking mind. People have a very active mind. You come from work, from your family life, or what it is. You come here, you're trying to settle down, and the mind is already running 100 miles an hour, and it continues to run. Maybe it goes back to 90 miles an hour, yeah? But it's not enough to really settle down. 90 miles an hour is still too fast. But at least you're going down from 100 to 90, so rejoice in every little kind of positive step in the right direction. So when you see 90 miles an hour, you think, yay, 90 miles an hour, wow, progress, yeah? Last week it was 95, now it's 90, whoa, going really well. So you see kind of a slight decrease in the speed of your mind running along here. But notice the mind, the running mind, notice where it is hanging out. And what you will notice is that the places it hangs out will be things that are important to you, yeah? Things about work, perhaps, yeah? Things that happen at work, maybe kind of things to do with your colleagues at work. Other people often tend to kind of occupy a lot of time in our minds, yeah? What happens with other people, either good things or bad things or whatever it is. So work experience, one thing. Family, another one, very important one, yeah, especially if there are kind of conflict and problems and that sort of thing, yeah, and you need to sort it out. Or anything else in your life that is important to you, anything that can, you know, is a problem to you, or anything that gives you pleasure in any particular way, that is where the mind tends to kind of hang out. So notice that. Try to figure out, you know, what is your existence, yeah? This is what we mean by existence in Buddhism, is the idea of hanging your mind, kind of staying in a certain place and taking an interest in that. So the trick in Buddhism is to shift your interest away from those worldly things and instead towards spiritual practice, meditation practice instead. And when your interest shifts from the worldly things to more spiritual things, what happens is that you don't tend to think so much about the spiritual things. What happens instead is that your mind tends to become peaceful. That is a very beautiful transition when you see that. So to be able to do that, what we have to do is we have to reprioritize and to change what actually really matters to us. So what is important in your life? If you kind of up the level of importance of your meditation practice, of your spiritual life, of being kind and compassionate and caring, all these kind of things. If you lift that up one level up, and you allow the worldly things to become the second priority in your life, not the first priority, but the second priority, then that is where meditation, the spiritual life, really starts to take off, because you've got your priorities in the right order. And this is so fundamental to making meditation actually work. If you come here to the Armadale group to meditate because you're going to use meditation to kind of to help you sort out your problems in life, it's perfectly okay. You're more than welcome to do that. But if you do that, if your main aim is to come here to kind of sort out the rest of your life, what that means is that meditation is taking second place. Your ordinary life is kind of number one. Meditation is subsidiary to that, because it's you using it for another purpose which is even higher to you. Yeah? And that is where the problem starts already. Because if that is your attitude, your mind will always prioritize those other things. And then you will think about them, you will ruminate about them, and it will be very, very hard to actually let go of that. If you turn it around, and you say, my main priority in life is actually my spiritual practice. It's about becoming peaceful in meditation. It's about my attitude to other people and these things they love. That is number one. Everything else I do in life, my family life, my work life, whatever else it is that you do in your life, yeah, even going on holiday perhaps, all of that is there to support my spiritual practice. Yeah, then when you come to your meditation, you meditate, you don't think about those other things, because you did those other things to support what you're doing now. Yeah, they are there to help you, to enable your meditation practice. That's why you're doing those other things. And perhaps you think this is strange. Perhaps you think that this sounds like a way of becoming a very cold person, perhaps because you're prioritizing your spiritual life. But actually, if you're able to do that, it's very powerful. Because remember, the spiritual life is really about kindness. It's about compassion. It's about understanding it. How we deal with other people, yeah? That is what it really is about. So if you prioritize that, actually, a consequence of prioritizing your spiritual life, then all the other pieces tend to fall into place at the same time. Yeah? This is kind of the beauty of this. So if you get your priorities right, everything actually tends to come out in a good way as a consequence of that. So while we are doing the meditation today, this is one of the things I would try to repeat a little bit. Yeah, basically, we're talking about the same thing during the meditation as I'm talking about now. But to get your priorities right, remember what really matters in the world. Remember what is really important. Remember that if you put the goodness, the kindness, the meditation, the personal qualities you have at the very top, everything else tends to fall into place. So give that the priority. Remember that life lived well with your family, with work or whatever it is, when that is lived well, then you are imbuing your ordinary life with spiritual qualities, and that then supports also your meditation practice. So get the priorities right, and that can have a very powerful effect on your meditation practice. Anyway, I'm going to stop there, and I'm going to maybe talk more about these things afterwards, but now it is time to try out your practice. So, okay, so as we start off, as always, just make sure that you are nice and relaxed, that you are at ease, that you're feeling comfortable on your chair. And we're going to be about half an hour, perhaps, doing this meditation. So you can sit in a comfortable position for about half an hour, so that would be good. As we start the meditation, make sure at the beginning that you take plenty of time just to relax and just to find the ease of the body and also the ease of the mind. Make sure you take a lot of time at the beginning. There is no urgency. We grabbing hold of your meditation subject, whether that is the breath, or whether it is just the awareness of the present moment, or it is metta practice or whatever, allow that to wait. First of all, just relax and enjoy just the feeling of sitting peacefully on your chair. As you sit down peacefully, begin by just feeling your body, making sure your body is at ease. One way of doing the meditation practice is to go through your body part by part to make sure that you are relaxed. Otherwise, you can just go to those areas where tension normally arises, like the stomach region, your shoulders perhaps, or your face. And as you feel those areas, feel them with a sense of kindness and compassion, as you do that, you gradually allow yourself to relax. Just stay with your body for now and allow your body to relax more deeply than it normally does. And stay with it until that really happens. To enable this to happen, your attitude is so important. So remember to approach yourself and your body and your mind with a sense of gentleness and kindness and care. And if you do that, it's almost as if everything falls into place by itself. Gentleness and care allows you to be who you are, and when you are who you are, there's no willpower, there's nothing to drive you anywhere in particular, and you can relax 100%.
wonderful thing it is that there is such a thing as the Armadale Meditation Group. What a wonderful thing it is to be able to come to a place like this, a place to meet like-minded people who have a sense of care and compassion and a sense of wanting to do what is good in the world. What a wonderful thing it is. Have that sense of gratitude towards the group, toward this possibility. And as you do that, you find you relax even further. There is nothing really that you have to do at this stage of the meditation. All you have to do is to have that sense of care and patience and just allow things to calm down by themselves. The less involved you are, the less you do, the more you allow things to be, the more peaceful and the more beautiful everything becomes. If you want to attend to anything, just feel that sense of beauty, of sitting completely silently with other people. There's something powerful about that. The silence is contagious in a sense. Allow it to soak through you, to permeate your entire being. That sense of peace, the beauty of the silence. if you find yourself drifting off, thinking about things, try to remind yourself of what really matters in life. Try to remind yourself of what your priorities are. Remember that everything you do in life can be viewed as supportive of your meditation practice. It is now while you do your meditation that you come the closest to touching the meaning of life itself. This is where things really happen. This is where you understand what life actually means. And this is where you find that meaning more fully than anywhere else. So remember those priorities. as you practice in this way, and you do find that your mindfulness arises, that you feel peaceful and you have a sense of clarity in your mind. If that happens, you can very gently place your awareness on the breath. Ideally, what you do is you just wait for the breath to arrive to you, instead of you looking for the breath. And when the breath arises by itself, very gently place your awareness there, and just leave your awareness there, feather light, no force, no power, almost as if you can allow the breath to come and go as it wishes. And then if the breath disappears, you just allow it to come back again, all by itself. One of the important things to remember with the breath meditation, to make it succeed, in a sense, is to regard your breath as a friend, as a dear friend who you're walking on this path of meditation practice together with. And as you do that, because the breath is a dear friend, you don't try to control those people who are dear to you. You allow them to be just the way they are. And because you allow the breath to be the way it is easy, it is light, it is comfortable. So allow the breath to come and go. If it disappears, there is no problem. You just wait patiently in the present moment until the breath comes back again. And there you are, continuing your meditation practice. the critical aspects of meditation, the attitude you have to the meditation object and also yourself, to see the meditation object as something positive, see your breath as your friend, the friend who has been with you since you were born, who's always been there, always supported you, and now it is almost as if you're walking hand in hand into this remarkable thing we call meditation practice. What a wonderful thing it is to have such a friend who's always there, always supporting you, and now even helping you to be peaceful and to achieve something more profound. we're coming close to the end of the meditation. Before we come to the end, just please take a minute or two just to reflect on the process that you have been through. Ask yourself, how do you feel now? If you do feel more peaceful, at ease, relaxed, mindful, compassionate, whatever it is, ask yourself the causes for that. There's always a reason for these things. There's a certain way of paying attention, a certain way of giving rise to certain perceptions and intentions. Try to understand the process, and as you understand the process, you start to take charge of your own meditation practice.
One question.
Okay, so good. Yeah, that's good. Can't read it, but just.
I like it.
No, it's fine. Get my glasses out. That will certainly help. See what. Excellent. So are you happy? Are you contented? Everyone is happy? Every single one? Surely someone is not happy. It's impossible that everyone is happy. There's no such thing here. It doesn't exist in samsara. Anyone have a really miserable meditation today? Really bad, really kind of, I want to leave this group as soon as possible. No? Okay. Does anyone have anything in particular you want to bring up about your meditation? No? Usual problems, yeah. Some people feeling a bit sleepy, some people thinking too much. Yeah, that kind of stuff. We've all been there, all done that, yeah. So that's the way it goes usually. That's great. So as long as you are enjoying it, that's the most important part. Remember, one of the things about meditation practice is that it really works when you keep on at it for long periods of time. Yeah, that's when it kind of has effects and it changes your life in many ways. So it's so important that you enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, you're not going to be able to persevere and sustain it. You're not going to be here for... How many years have you been coming here, Doug?
28 years!
Wow, that's pretty good, yeah? That's almost as long as Rachel. Where is Rachel? Rachel hiding? Yeah, back to back there. Okay, very good. When did you start this group, Rachel?
31 years ago.
31 years ago, okay. You've been here since day one, yeah?
Yeah.
that's wonderful. That's one of the very important principles of meditation, is actually just to make sure that you enjoy it. And if you don't enjoy it, then you have to try to find out why. Yeah? What else can we do to kind of sort it out, so to speak? There are some people who don't enjoy meditation. It's perfectly okay not to enjoy it. There should be no pressure to enjoy meditation practice. It would be a terrible thing if there was. So if you don't enjoy it, please just be honest about it. And then we'll try to find a solution to whatever the problem is. It's so important. One of the things that I would recommend you to do
one of the nice things about coming to a meditation group is that you kind of get into everybody's together. Yeah, when everybody's here, there's a kind of energy in the group. You know what I mean? That can help you out. If you go back home and you try to do the same thing, it may be much more difficult. I'm sure some of you have actually noticed that. So one way of doing that, if you want to do some meditation at home as well, is to have a nice recording. Yeah, somebody's voice that you like, a meditation that you really kind of think is good for you. And play that to kind of put you in the right mood. Yeah, it's so important. It's easy for me. I'm a monk. I'm in the forest. I got the kangaroos around me. Yeah, so it's easy for me to be peaceful. Much more difficult if you live in kind of suburbia. And I guess most of you, that's what you probably do. Yeah, it's kind of, that's what life is usually like these days. Anyone want to say anything here? Nobody wants to say anything at all? Okay, yeah, that's fine. Don't have to say anything else. Please, as I go along and talk tonight, you're more than welcome to ask questions as we go along. So please don't feel shy or anything like that. If you do feel shy, that's okay as well. So whatever is okay. Everything is okay. Mm-hmm.
Someone
has a problem. Ah, please. Yeah.
I think
I was going to give her the mic so we could all hear the question.
Okay. Should I repeat it? Yeah.
Yes.
She was just asking whether the meditation tonight was recorded and whether she could have a copy of it. And Doug says yes, is that right? No?
You can download it.
Yeah. Oh, it goes online, that's right. Okay.
Online, yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you so much.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's one customer satisfied. That's really good. Customer satisfaction. Okay, so what I'm going to talk a little bit about tonight, I may come back to this question later on if you don't mind, but I was going to talk a little bit more about the things I started out with at the beginning here, about the idea of perspective, how to look at life, our outlook in life, yeah? Because our outlook feeds into what we value. How we look at the world feeds into our values. Our values are the things that are important to us, the things that make us prioritize certain things over others, yeah? So these things are actually really fundamental to our ability to lead the spiritual life or to lead any kind of life. Whatever we do in the world tends to rest on those values that we have. So values are very, very important and very significant. And for those of you who know a little bit about Buddhism, those who have been here for 28 years, for example, you will know about these things already, but you will know about things like the Noble Eightfold Path, yeah? Noble Eightfold Path is one of the fundamental things in the Buddhist teachings, and it tells us all about the practice, starting from the very beginning, all the way to the end of the Buddhist path. And what is one of the interesting things about this Buddhist path, it starts with something called right view. Yeah, that's the very beginning, that's kind of the foundation stone for everything else. And the reason why right view is so important is precisely because of what I was saying just now. Because right view has to do with our outlook on life, how we view things, how we look at other people, how we look at the world, what is valuable to us. Is what valuable to us, is it to kind of have a career and kind of make lots of money, have a big house and be famous and kind of have lots of followers on, Instagram? Is that what people are followers there, yeah? I don't think I've ever even been to that website, fortunately, but... Yeah, so are these things important or are there other things that maybe are marginally more important than that? A lot more important, of course. And this feeds in to what matters to us, what actually is important in our life. So important to have the right values. I want to talk a little bit about this idea of values, how to look at the world, look at the world in such a way that it actually enhances our ability to meditate, to practice well, to be kind, to be compassionate, and all of these kind of things. This is what I want to talk about. And one of the things that is very interesting as a Buddhist monk is right now I happen to be the most senior monk of the monastery. And when you are the most senior monk, as a Brahma is away, he's in Thailand, as an Appi is in Thailand, yeah, so I'm number one, I'm sitting at the top of the line. And when you sit at the top of the line, everybody comes to you, yeah? So for example, after the meal in the monastery, how many of you been to the monastery yet? Yeah? Okay, quite a few of you have been to the monastery. Okay, great. So after you're at the monastery, you're the senior monk. So you sit there, and people come up and they see you. Oh, I got such problems. Yeah, oh, my family, my kids are not doing what they're supposed to do. They're using drugs and they're doing all this kind of stuff, yeah? All my business is failing. I did this bad business deal, and now I've been sued by this company in whatever it is. Or I'm going through a divorce. Somebody in my family is getting sick, and got cancer. What am I supposed to do with this? And again, and what you see is you see the same problems again and again and again in people's lives. Everybody basically has the same problems. And when you look at those problems and you try to understand what they really come down to, what they all come down to is the idea of impermanence, of unreliability, of the world not going according to your wishes. Yeah, everything is so unreliable. Everything is always changing. Everything is always moving. And when it moves, when it changes, it's very often in a direction that is not very pleasant. At least that's what we see. That's when the complaints come. Yeah, things are going the wrong way. Sometimes they're going a good way, but often they also go in the wrong way. So the root problem, very often, is precisely this idea of things being unreliable, being impermanent, being anicca, as we say in the Pali language, which is the ancient Buddhist language. Yeah, anicca, got that? Yeah, if you want to kind of impress your friends, you can go and say anicca. People say, whoa, that's pretty impressive. Yeah, anicca is Pali, this is ancient Indian language. So if you know that, you will impress a few people, I think, yeah. So I'm going to use lots of Pali words tonight just to impress you guys. Yeah? So you really, so it sounds like I know what I'm talking about. So anicca, one of those really fundamental words in Buddhism. Actually, it's quite a nice word to remember because it kind of summarizes this idea of unreliable, uncertain, changeable, all of these kind of things. It kind of summarizes into this one word. And this is what life is like. Yeah, life is like this. And I see it again and again and again. Things changing, and sometimes, unfortunately, in a negative direction. It's unavoidable. It happens to all of us. And then people come to me and they say, oh, this is happening. What is the reason? Why is this happening to me? What did I do in the past to deserve this? You have this Buddhist idea of karma. Karma is that if you do something in life, it has consequences. Yeah, if you do something bad, bad consequences often come. If you do something good, if you have good intentions in your life, good results follow because of that. The basic idea of karma is actually very easy to understand, and I think all of you will understand it quite simply if I put it in the right way. And that is very simply that if you have a kind intention towards somebody, if you do an act of kindness, generosity towards another person, how do you feel about yourself? You feel good about yourself. Yeah, I feel good about myself when I'm kind. I do something kind, or sometimes I do it spontaneously, and I think, wow, that felt really nice. I did something kind. We do something which is not so kind, a little bit rotten, yeah? How do you feel afterwards? You feel the exact opposite. You feel a bit negative about yourself. And this is really what karma is about. To understand the Buddhist laws of karma is the direct connection that you can see inside of yourself between your intentions on the one hand and the immediate result that comes from that intention afterwards. That's what it really is about. But people very often think of karma as something, I do something this life and I reach something in a future life. Yeah, this is kind of very much more common way of thinking about it, but I think far less useful. But anyway, people come to you as a senior market and say, oh, what have I done in a past life? Yeah, I want to find a solution for this. What is the reason why this is happening to me? I don't deserve this. We don't deserve this. No. It's not so loud anymore, it's really nice, okay? It's been really loud. But that is really the wrong way of looking at these problems. Yeah, trying to find the causes why things are happening. There isn't really any solution in that. There is, of course, sometimes you can find a small reason why something happened. You can maybe change your habits or change your way of doing things a little bit and resolve certain issues. Of course, that is very useful. But in the end, problems tend to come back again. If you can resolve one issue, something else happens instead. And the point here is that it is the nature of human existence, any kind of existence really, that things are impermanent, things are changeable, and that suffering arises as a consequence of that. It is not something that you can resolve just by trying to look into the past and seeing the causes of these things. But this is often the illusion. Yeah, if I find the solution to this, I will be able to resolve all the problems in my life, to change everything so it comes right. Yeah, that is often the illusion, and then there will be no problems anymore in the future. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. That is not the right way of looking at things. The right way of looking at things is to understand these things have to happen. And when you think about it, you know it's true. Yeah, we all know that eventually people around us are going to die. Eventually we are going to die. We know that things, we're going to have to give up things around us eventually. Things are always changing. The stock market is going up, recently going down. Yeah. I usually in the monastery say, oh, please do some chanting for us. The stock market goes back up again. I lost so much money on the stock market. This is the kind of, this is often sometimes the kind of things we hear in the monastery. But this is life, yeah? The stock markets, they go up, well, they must also come down. Sometimes it's really good when the stock market goes down because we get more customers in the monastery, you know, kind of people more desperate, yeah? So it's actually quite useful sometimes. But it hasn't. It has to be that. In fact, be that way. This is life. Life is like this. There is no kind of way around it. So remembering the idea of impermanence, of unreliability, is so important in life. We know it's true, but somehow, when it happens to us, we are still surprised. Yeah, you know that we're going to get sick sometimes. You know that sometimes things aren't go right. But still, when it happens, we say, why me? Why now? I don't want this. This is wrong. It shouldn't happen. What can we do? Yeah. Why does this happen? Why is it that even though in many ways it is so obvious that these things have to happen, why is it that we're still surprised? And one of the reasons is that we just forget. Yeah, we come to Armada group once a week, and there's 6 days in between, and those 6 days in between, it's easy to forget about these things. I know what it's like. I'm not saying that because I think that you are all really dumb-dumbs or anything like that. Yeah, that's not what I think at all. I'm saying it because life is so busy. Even as a monk, sometimes you forget these things, let alone in lay life. You do so much stuff, and suddenly in daily life, you've forgotten everything about the spiritual values, and you're kind of pulled in to the ordinary things that you have to deal with in life. And this is often a problem. And sometimes life is quite smooth. Yeah, you go through years, and things are going quite well for you. There doesn't seem to be any major problems in your life. And you forget about the realities. You forget that one day things are not going to go so well. So this is the danger of complacency when things are going well. Yeah, wow, life is actually, this is what life really is like. Yeah, it's really happy, everything is going smoothly. But no, life isn't really like that. Life is really sometimes like that. And sometimes it's not like that. Sometimes it's more difficult. Yeah, sometimes happy, sometimes difficult. So when things go well, don't think that now I can forget all about my spiritual practice. Now I can start kind of drinking and gambling and doing all kind of dodgy stuff, yeah? Cheat on whatever. And don't think like that, because you're building up your resilience to deal with the difficult times during the good times. So don't take the good times for granted. Don't think this is the way it's going to be always. Remember that there's always a downside. There's always a problem that's coming down the track. So this is one of the problems, is that when things go well, we tend to forget about the problems. But there's another reason why we often forget about the problems of impermanence and unreliability. And this is the deeper aspects of Buddhist philosophy, or Buddhist worldview, if you like. And this is the fact that it feels like we are in charge of our lives. It feels like we have a sense of agency, that we have an input in how the world works. And because that sense of self is very strong very often, the sense of agency, of ability to control events, we buy too much into that, and we think that we can control the world outside. And that is why we are surprised when the world doesn't go according to our wishes. Yeah, so the sense of self, the sense of being in control, is often very deceptive, and it gives you a wrong idea of what life actually is about. And to understand this, because many people find the Buddhist idea we call it the idea of non-self, they find it quite challenging, and of course, perhaps rightly so, but to understand this idea a little bit, I will just take you through just a very simple thought experiment, yeah? And this is just going back to the meditation we did just 20 minutes ago, whatever it was. And if you remember your meditation practice, when your meditation goes well, yeah? What happens when your meditation goes well? Your thinking mind dies down a little bit. You start to feel peaceful, yeah? And when you start to feel peaceful and your thinking mind goes down, what does that feel like? Most of you probably agree it feels good, yeah? It feels peaceful, it feels nice, it feels like you're uplifted somehow. It's a positive feeling. Yeah? And that positive feeling, because the mind actually is thinking less, there is less of a sense of self there. The sense of self expresses it through thinking, yeah? That's how it expresses itself. So right there, by understanding the connection between lack of thinking and happiness, and understanding that thinking itself is actually an expression of the sense of self, you can see how non-self, the idea of disappearing a little bit, actually is a very beautiful thing. It's not scary at all. It's actually very powerful. It's very beautiful. The less there is of you there, the better it is. Yeah, it's almost counterintuitive in some ways. But also, once you get into that idea, it actually becomes very beautiful and something very useful that you can use in your attitude towards life and your outlook and all of these kind of things. So once you see that, you also start to understand that the idea of a self, a doer, this idea of agency in the world, it is deeply problematic. It is deeply problematic because actually it is often a cause of problems rather than a solution to problems. The less there is of that agency, the more peaceful you feel. Actually, the more happy you are. And the more you try to control the world, the more you try to do these things, actually the more problematic life tends to become. And in any case, the reality is that the world tends to go according to its own cause and conditions. It goes in its own way. And our input in that world is so little. Yeah, you look at the world, you look at kind of, you know, the political events in the world, or the environmental events, or the refugee problems, or drug problems, or wars in the Middle East, or whatever it is, It's, how much control do we have over those things? We are disappointed, but the reality is we have absolutely no control over these things. So why should we be disappointed? It is the world going according to its own cause and conditions. It is impermanent, it's unreliable, it's uncertain. We have no idea where these things are going to head in the future. So this is one of those very useful and fundamental outlooks on the Buddhist path. And something I would recommend you to remember all the time. It's not just Buddhist, it's kind of common sense. You can call it Buddhist if you like, but really it's common sense. The thing that things are always kind of moving in waves, and no idea where it's going to go next. But when you remember that, when you remember the uncertainty of the world outside, of your relationships, your work, the political world, the environment, all of these things. When you know how uncertain it is, you stop to place so much interest, so much vested interest, so much of your happiness in those things. You don't identify with those things anymore. If some politician gets elected that you don't like, okay, you shrug your shoulders, It's bound to happen. There's always changes in the political scene. So you just shrug your shoulders, and life kind of goes on after all. And you start to realize that if you place too much emphasis on these things, if you allow these things to kind of move you around from happiness to unhappiness all the time, you will never really find any real peace and happiness in the world, because these things are inherently unreliable. So everything in the external world, this is what I'm coming to now, everything in the external world, everything that is outside of us, runs according to its own cause and conditions. And because of that, it is really out of control. Everything in the external world. And what that means is that instead of focusing so much on external things in our life, instead of making these the priority, instead of making these the things that kind of makes us feel good or bad, we turn in a different direction, and we turn inwards instead. Because the inner world is a world where we have some degree of control, if you like, some degree of input of how to live our inner lives. The external world is really completely out of control, but our inner life, at the very least, we have a little bit more control. Even the inner life sometimes is hard enough to control, the mind is kind of all over the place. At least we have a little bit of input there. So what we do is, if we understand this problem, if we have this kind of outlook, we change where we invest our time and energy. We don't invest so much time and energy anymore in trying to control the external world. Instead, we invest our energy and time into our own inner life, into your mind, into your heart, into your personal qualities. That is where you make your investment. And as you make that investment over time, it is absolutely amazing what can happen. I've been a monk for 22 years now. If you had seen me 22 years ago, you'd be whoa! This fellow has no chance in monastic life. Yeah, he's completely hopeless. So something really happens over 22 years. Something actually changes your attitude, your outlook, your personal qualities. Everything kind of just goes up and up and up incrementally over time, and you're basically changing your inner life, changing who you are as a person, and you're trying to do something with that one thing in the world that actually you have some ability to change. And this is what the spiritual life really is all about. You change your priorities, you change your, what I like to say, your investment strategy. Yeah, have you got an investment strategy? I don't know if you have an investment, but this is a real investment strategy. Forget about the stock market, yeah? Stock market is irrelevant and all of this. This is a real investment strategy here. And when you do that, then you start to build up a sense of happiness, of contentment inside of yourself that is free, in a sense, of the manipulations of the external world. It becomes independent. You start to feel free of everything else and independent of external phenomena. And you gain a strength inside of yourself, which is always there, regardless of what happens outside of you. And this is incredibly useful. Yeah, we all know that in life, sometimes you have to go through really difficult times. Sometimes people very close to us pass away or whatever it is. It can be very difficult to deal with. But the more you build up your own inner spiritual qualities, the more resilient you are in connection with difficult life events that we're all going to have to meet sooner or later. And this is the power of this kind of thing. So this is how a very simple reflection on something like impermanence can be extremely useful and extremely powerful in redirecting our life, in giving us different set of values, which then gives us a different set of priorities. Yeah, you make sure you come to Ananda Group every week. Yeah, or sometimes you kind of go, maybe listen to some of the talks of the Buddhist Society. We have lots of talks there as well. Maybe come back to the monastery every now and again, check out the monastery. And because your values start to change, you understand that real contentment is to be found in a different place from where most people actually normally look for it. That is an incredibly useful thing to be aware of. So that is a little bit about the Buddhist idea of impermanence. Does anyone have any comments about that? Is anyone familiar with these ideas at all? Yeah? Yes?
I'm
a
I'm in awe and appreciation at the moment. I don't know much about the Buddhist faith, but I'm resonating with everything you've just said, because you're probably the first person I've found that I've been as like-minded with.
Okay.
With what you.
Okay. Wow, that's good. I'm very glad. Yeah.
I believe you can't change the circumstances, you can only change the way you feel about them.
Yeah. Great. That's a very Buddhist kind of outlook. Yeah. That's good. Yeah. Because this is, in a sense, what happens to many people. It happened to me when I first came across the Buddhist teaching. Something just resonates with you. Think, whoa, this is it. This is what I've been looking for all along. Yeah. That's great. Wonderful. Okay. Does that make sense to people as well? Yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah. Definitely. Yeah. Okay. That's good. So great. So I'm not going to. I might as well talk a bit more, because if you don't have any questions, I have to talk. Yeah, how it works and how it goes. So I'll talk a little bit more, because that's one of the things that I always bring up when I talk about the idea of impermanence and kind of unreliability of things. And this is the Buddhist simile. There's a Buddha. One of the things about the Buddhist teachings is they're full of similes and metaphors and all kind of beautiful, allegories and that kind of stuff, which makes the teachings come alive in a very beautiful way. One of these similes is a simile of the borrowed goods. I love this. I talk about it all the time, so I apologize if you heard it before, but this is one of my favorite similes in the suttas. And the simile of the borrowed goods is the simile of this man. This is kind of this in India 2,500 years ago, a man who kind of borrows all things. Then at that time, when you borrowed a carriage, yeah, and you had some horses, and you had some jewelry or whatever, and then you kind of travel around with this carriage, and you think you're very important because you have these kind of few nice things around you, like somebody today traveling in a Rolls Royce or something like that. And then while in the middle of borrowing these things, everybody said, "Wow, look at this man, he's really wealthy, yeah, this is how the wealthy live. Wow, that's a bit like people look at, you know, wealthy or famous people today." And then suddenly, while you're in the middle of that, then the owners come and they take back all their borrowed goods. Now if you identify with those goods, if you think of yourself, "Wow, actually I really am wealthy, this is what it feels like to be wealthy," if you identify too much with that, then when the owners come and take it back, suddenly you feel like naked. Yeah, you feel like, whoa, you suffer because you actually have identified with those things. It's very difficult then when the owners claim it all back to actually deal with that. And the idea of this simile is that our lives are basically like that. Almost everything we have in life are borrowed goods. Yeah, we have them for a while, but the very latest, when we die, we're going to have to give it all up. Very often, long before that, very often, you know, relationships break up or the stock market goes down. Yeah, and all of these things happen long before we die, but at the very latest, when we die. So everything has to go. All our possessions have to go. Our family members have to go. Our friends have to go. Yeah. A lot of the things that we identify with in this world, our kind of who we are as a family member, what we are in the kind of social hierarchy of the world, our social position, our education levels, yeah, our wealth, all these things that give us a sense of identity in this world, that has to go as well, because it's tied to this world. Our body ultimately has to go. Yeah. So many of the things that we have in this life are like borrowed goods. We're going to have to give it up, either now, soon, or at the very latest when we die. So the question then is, if all these things are borrowed goods, where should we invest our time? Where should we invest our energy? And the answer is, of course, that the place to invest your energy is in those things that are not borrowed goods, the things that are more permanent, the things that are there that you can take with you also into the future. And of course, the Buddhist idea is, and this is where the idea of rebirth comes in, yeah? When you die, you continue on. And the things that you take with you from one life to the next one, it obviously isn't your possession, it obviously isn't your friends and acquaintances. What it is the qualities of your mind. That is what you take with you into the future. Yeah, so if you're going to be wise, instead of investing in all those borrowed goods and attaching to those things, and then when you die, you think, it's all going, what am I going to do now? I spent all my time amassing all this stuff, and now it's going to go. You feel confused, you feel uncertain, you realize you haven't really been spending your life all that wisely, because you have been investing in stuff that all has to go. But if instead you invest in things that of the mind that make you feel content and satisfied and happy and caring and compassionate inside, and wise, not the least, wisdom is the highest faculty in Buddhism, yeah? If you invest in those things, you carry those things with you into the future, and then when you die, you tend to have a much more peaceful and relaxed death, because you know that you've been spending your life really well investing in those things that you can take with you into the future. So how do we do this? How do we actually... what does it mean to invest in the right way or do things in the right way? What does it mean to live a spiritual life? It doesn't necessarily mean that you have to become a monk or a nun. Yeah, not straight away anyway. You can give it a bit of time. It doesn't necessarily mean that. It may mean that, but it may not necessarily mean that. Doug, you should have become... Well, did you ever think of becoming a monk yet? Is that ever on the agenda? Was it always there?
I have to ask your wife.
You have to ask your wife? Okay, yeah. Okay. That's very good, isn't it? It's always important to take
it into
account.
I think
she would say yes. You would say yes? She'd be happy to give you up? Okay.
After 48 years.
That's what it is. Okay. That's great. But the point is not that you have to kind of change your lifestyle dramatically or anything like that. The point is how we live our lives. Yeah? It's the quality that we put into our lives. That is really what it is. Instead of asking the what's of life, what am I, what is my status, what is my bank account, what is my, how many friends do I have, how many followers do I have on Instagram? Yes, I'm asking the what's of the numbers of life, or the quantity of life. We ask the how of life. Yeah, how am I living? If I have a job, instead of asking how much money I'm making, how, what attitude am I putting into my job? Yeah, am I helping, am I doing something positive for my co-workers, for my customers, for everyone else? What kind of heart quality am I bringing to my family members, to my fellows in the Armadale group? Yeah, it's more about the how of life that is important. So the what of life becomes less important, and the how becomes far more important. And as you do that, you are imbuing your whole life with spiritual qualities. And then you're actually turning your life around. And this is what it means to live a spiritual life. It doesn't mean, you know, going to a temple every week or coming to the Armadale group every week. It is how we live our everyday lives that really matter. And of course, as a monk, you are very privileged, because it means that you are pretty much always surrounded by like-minded people. Yeah, you live in a monastery in a little hut in the forest, and you are reminded of these things all the time, which is great. But it's wonderful if every one of you can try to bring these things more and more gradually into your broader life. And as you do that, you create a whole life that is focused on these things, focused on those things that really matter, that are really important. And then that is how the kind of the long-term investment, yeah, into the long-term, that is how it comes about as a consequence. So instead of short-term investment, long-term. Everybody, yeah, if you go to a financial advisor, they will say long-term investment, not short-term, yeah? It's exactly the same thing in the spiritual life. But invest for the long-term, and then you are really doing the right thing. And what is so interesting about this is that other things tend to fall into place as a consequence. It doesn't mean that we neglect our other aspects of life. It is just that we focus on them in a different way, and things tend to fall into place as a consequence of that. Okay, so now we have 5 minutes left, and I'm going to now take this question. Before I do that, any other questions about what I've been saying?
Somebody's just put a question.
Have they? Okay. Oh, okay, very good. Thank you so much for your time. Yeah. So I will do this question first of all, because this one was already there. And this question is as follows. Nobody else wants to ask anything else? Oh, please. Yeah, sorry.
I just like to say I enjoyed this evening very much. A lot of what the young lady said, I resonate very strongly with. And I was more curious to know what, but there's not enough time.
Yeah.
But what brought you into this?
Yeah.
Into this lifestyle? I'll say that for next time.
Thank you for next time. Okay. Well, okay. Sure. I can give you. No, I'm not going to say anything. I'll save it for next time. Good point. Yeah. So sometimes it's hard to answer those questions. Yeah. You don't even know exactly what brings you into this thing. Yeah, exactly. Anyway, let's have a quick look at these couple of questions here. What would be the odds of a layperson gaining rebirth, and what can we do to help? The odds of gaining rebirth are incredibly good. Yeah, they're really, really high. In fact, if you don't want to get reborn, that is where the spiritual path, the Buddhist path, is all about. It's about not getting reborn. Yeah. So it's kind of, the odds are incredibly good. So if you want to get reborn, I guarantee you it's going to happen. So what should we do, and can we do to help? So remember the idea of rebirth. It's if you live your life well, rebirth is not an issue. It's not a problem. You're going to kind of move on, and you're going to be happy where you go in the future. It's really about how you live this life. Yeah. So always, if you're somebody you want to encourage, and they believe in rebirth and they want to do the right thing, always encourage them to live life well. That is what really matters. If you live life well, no worries. If you don't live life well, well, you can only do so much. You can't really help people that much if they haven't lived their life well. But what you can do, and this is what I would recommend, if somebody is really dying, and maybe they have lived a life like many people have, not sure, a little bit good, a little bit bad, a mixture of both things, what you should do is always to go to their bedside and remind them of the good parts of their life. Yeah, remind them, thanking for the good times. Remind them of all the positive things that you see in that person. Yeah, and say, wow, what a wonderful thing that you did that. And very often, they may never have thought of those things, because we tend to forget about some of the good things we do. Sometimes we don't understand the impact we have on people around us. So go to them, tell them about the good things, remind them of the good qualities. Just to give you an example, I have a sister who is very seriously ill with cancer. And about a few months ago, I wrote her an email, and I kind of said all the things that I really appreciated about her. And she was kind of flabbergasted, she didn't know what to believe, yeah. And she was really touched by that. Because her brother, usually very fault-finding, yeah, brothers tend to fault-find with the sisters, yeah, I would just like every all other brothers, I suppose. But now I said something nice, and she was so happy and so pleased with that. It often has a very powerful impact when we do something unusual, when we look at things in a different way. So go to the bedside and lift their spirits a little bit in this way. And don't go there just to cry, and say, oh no, don't go, they've got no choice, yeah? They're dying, there's not much choice in the matter. So instead, go there and say, and do something positive like that. And when you do that, then you're kind of lifting their spirits, and that enables them then to travel on into the future in a positive way. One of the most, I'm not going to go on to that one, so I'll leave that one out. I'll let me very quickly look at the last question. I've got 2 minutes left. Doug, is that right? Yeah? It's okay? Okay. I'm Scandinavian by birth. I have to be very precise. Yeah, we kind of keep things. Anyway, maybe I should adapt a little bit. So, anyway, this question is as follows. I would like to take the 5 precepts, however. Whoa! Yay! That's wonderful. I take prescribed strong pain medication. Can I take the 5 precepts? Yes, you can. No problem whatsoever. That is, the prescription drugs is not a problem at all. If you want to take heroin, it's not so good, but prescription drugs is not a big issue. So you can certainly take the 5 precepts. It's wonderful that you're doing that. It is one of the things that the Buddha talks about the 5 precepts. He says that this is the kind of morality that if you are serious about your spiritual practice, whether you call yourself a Buddhist or not, this is the foundation for the spiritual path. Yeah. So please, if you have the opportunity, you feel you can do it, keep these ones. It's a wonderful thing to do now, the 5 precepts. If you don't know what they are, next time I come, I'll let you know. Okay. Thanks so much. I'll pass it on to Doug again.